I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Hello, place to go.
6:12, time for a little car dancing.
Hello, place to go.
Feels like Thursday. How about you?
Hello, place to go. Hello, place to go. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going.
Busy little show today. Nick DiGilio in just a few minutes. Monkeys tickets. You know what we're going to do? We're going to play Know Your Monkeys.
Catching on like wildfire.
Hottest game coast to coast. Know Your Monkeys.
We're getting really good at it.
I have monkey fun facts of actual monkeys. Not the band, the monkeys, but the monkeys tickets is what you're going to win. You want to take a monkey? Feel free.
You sure about that?
Sure. Just me and my capuchin. Bridget Gaynor will be on with us after 7 o'clock, so will House Minority Leader Jim Durkin. And I'll tell you what went down yesterday at Channel 9 when Dan Hampton and Lou Manfredini and I did some videos for the Chevy Silverado giveaway. Kelty Knight from Entertainment Tonight later. The president may call this morning.
Wow.
And Ethan Hawke. Is Ethan Hawke coming in? Are you guys listening to the show? Is Ethan Hawke coming in?
Yep, he's coming in.
Ethan Hawke will be in studio, and Michael Imperioli. Joe, you, like I, like me, like we, were big Sopranos fans.
Indeed, we were.
Michael Imperioli played who?
Christopher
Moltisanti. Oh, Tony wanted so much for Christopher. And yet, in the end, Christopher disappointed him. He's a writer now. Imperioli, along with an actor. But Imperioli's got a book out as well. Is he coming in as well?
No, he's on the phone.
He's in L.A.
He's in L.A.? He can't swing by?
No.
All right, 6:14. Let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Item number one, a 94-year-old woman in Elgin got in trouble with the law because her impeached Trump sign was too big. Myra Becker answered her door and met with code enforcement officers from the city of Elgin, told her, sign's got to go. It's not what you put on it. But the sign's size, 3 feet tall by 4 feet wide, was larger than the size allowed by city ordinance, which is 3 square feet. That's, 3 feet tall by a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Or 3 feet wide by a foot tall. She's already replaced it with a smaller sign.
Okay.
You could also go 2 feet wide by a foot and a half tall. Or a foot and a half tall by 2.5 feet, right, 2 feet wide. You understand what I'm doing? We just have to make sure the multiplication gets to 3.
Got it.
I believe there's only one explanation for this, and that's that Myra, who is sitting outside enjoying the sun, holding her impeached Trump sign, was turned in by someone who is a Trump supporter. I don't think the town of Elgin has people going out measuring signs.
And that's
I
not
think
very
so.
Much of a. That's not a very big sign.
It's not a big sign, and there's not a big difference.
Yeah, because we have bigger signs than that out in the western burbs that I've seen.
So someone must have turned in 94-year-old Myra.
At least she wasn't kneeling in her front yard.
Really
God
sad.
Bless her. She'd probably need help up if she
right.
did that.
Yeah,
I know I would. Next, right, by the way, we're trying to get Myra on the show. And if you know Myra, please tell her we're trying to get her on the show because she sounds like spunky and full of vinegar.
Definitely spunky.
I think we should start a legal defense fund for her.
Done. Matter of fact, I'll pay for her free attorney. Gwendolyn Brooks became the first Chicago-based black poet honored with a statue and a memorial in Chicago Public Park. That's a cool story. Next. judge dismissing the homeless tent city lawsuit against the city of Chicago for denying permits for an uptown tent city. Advocates for the homeless said they would continue their fight to allow homeless people to protect themselves against the city's notoriously harsh climate. The notoriously harsh climate is a very difficult thing to live through, obviously, if you're homeless. A lot of the homeless folks refuse to go to shelters because they say the shelters are too dangerous. You know, it seems to me we're inside out on this investigation. And, Steve, we're talking about the tent cities that popped up on Lawrence and Wilson, I assume, right?
Right. There were tent cities under, if anybody went under the bridge at Lawrence before it started to be built, rebuilt, they were there. And they've also been, I believe, at Wilson and to a lesser extent on other bridges. But it was definitely Wilson and Lawrence were the two.
The city has an obligation to make sure that public roads are passable and obviously to keep the public safe. Were there any crimes reported by those that lived in the tent city?
I don't know that. I know that I walked and rode my bike through there a lot. Other people walked dogs through there. They have changed the one at Wilson Avenue so that there's gates. It's going to make it harder for people, I think, to put tents there and also navigate.
But you weren't hassled by anybody?
Never.
Okay.
Never.
You got to have heart, folks. You got to have heart. You got to believe that there's a better thing that we can all do for people who are going through that. And the city needs to make sure that these shelters are safe enough to go. It's very difficult for the police and for homeless shelter personnel to convince people who refuse to leave to go. And at some point, action may need to be taken. Bottom line, it's a very difficult problem. Next, President Trump signed a veterans health bill as the White House working against the bipartisan plan to fund it. The bipartisan plan to fund it is a problem for a number of layered reasons that we'll get into a little bit later, at least from President Trump's view. Next, Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, apparently got over his laryngitis and joined other lawmakers in dismissing President Trump's claims that the Justice Department had placed a spy in his campaign. He also said that Mr. Trump should not try to pardon himself. In other words, very brave. Next. And Mike Madigan pushed out his longtime chief of staff, Tim Mapes, yesterday after a House staff member accused the top aide of sexual harassment over several years and fostering, quote, a culture of sexism, harassment, and bullying that creates an extremely difficult working environment. We'll take this up after 7 o'clock as well when we get into politics on a deeper level. You can also at that point hear some rather remarkable pieces of sound from the president, from Rudy Giuliani, and from others just in the last 24-hour news cycle. That's your top six.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
It is 6:19, and Steve, what's coming up?
The top stories, again, at 6:30 this morning.
Wait, he's right behind you.
Ask him what one of them is.
The top story is the investigation of the...
we got to get this system fixed.
Yeah, getting adjusted to the new new digs here.
Yeah.
The top stories coming up at 6:30 involve the police involved a fatal shooting in Bronzeville last night. Also, the volcano activity in Guatemala. 99 people now dead there.
Yeah, that's
coming
up
at 6:30.
That's an awful story.
It is.
The Fuego volcano wiping out now possibly 2 to 3 rural villages. Just wiping them off the map. Just burying them in lava.
And not only that, they have heavy rains that are hindering the rescue efforts there. They had to call off a rescue effort yesterday because they were afraid of mudslides.
Does the rain help? I'm not a scientist when it comes to anything, let alone lava flow. Does the rain help in any way because you've got hot molten lava coming floating along, or it doesn't make a difference?
I don't think it makes a difference because that lava is so intensely hot. It's different than a fire that's extinguished, you know, with water. But this, that's an entirely different story. And, you know, you're powerless as a result of the volcanic activity. Same thing we're seeing in Kilauea in Hawaii.
When the volcano initially erupts, I saw a statistic yesterday or story yesterday, the volcanic lava rock slash whatever explosion blasts out at over 100 miles an hour. In other words, you can't outrun it. And the temperature of that lava that's flowing towards you or your home or people, 1200 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, at least. And how about the fact that, again, in Kilauea, using this as an example, when that lava hits the water in the ocean, it actually turns into kind of a glass material.
Yeah, that floating
is,
glass.
That is harmful to breathe. It will cut you in your mouth and in your lungs.
They call it Lays, a combination of lava and haze, and it's your urge to not go anywhere near it.
Yeah, exactly. So a different situation here in Guatemala now with the heavy rains and the mud, just adding to the problems of that volcanic activity there.
Terrible story, but nice to see you this morning. Identify yourself for the people.
Oh, I'm Dave Schwann in the WGN Newsroom. Thank you, Steve.
He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
626.
I need to know what Nick is thinking.
And we go live to Nick DiGiulio, who's live at his home. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
How are you, buddy?
All right, man. How are you?
Doing fine. Want to go backwards now, as we do, and we find out what movie you took your mom and dad to last weekend.
Johnny Knoxville's Action Point.
Big Jackass fans, are they?
Yeah, actually my dad is, which is not surprising. And they ended up actually liking it more than I did.
Really?
I thought there was too much plot and father-daughter relationship stuff and not enough, you know, Johnny Knoxville getting hit in the groin. I wanted more, you know, pain.
Did it please you to find out that Johnny Knoxville's never been more gravely injured on a movie?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew all the backstory and everything, and that was much more interesting than the movie itself. I found like him blowing his nose and his eye popping out of his head in real life. I wish they'd have filmed that.
Some of the great things you never catch on film in their time. Would you recommend it?
No, I didn't recommend it. I believe my dad would, because he laughed a lot more than I did. I laughed during about the first half hour, but then when it turns into like this, we're supposed to care about this father and daughter thing, I just was like, come on, when is he going to get hit in the nuts?
I heard a comparison of Johnny Knoxville again to a Three Stooges movie. The Three Stooges never did anything close to what this knucklehead does.
Well, no, I mean, with the Three Stooges, it was all fake. You know, I mean, you know, the eye pokes were not real. The slaps were not real. You know, smashing each other in the head with a hammer, they were rubber hammers.
But they did get hurt goofing around, but nothing like this.
Yeah, they did. Well, but nothing like, I mean, not even close to what Johnny Knoxville has done. Not even close to what any of these jackass guys have done. They pushed it to the limit and beyond. And I still think that the Jackass TV series and the three movies are masterpieces. I think they're fantastic.
I was really surprised to see Sir Laurence Olivier in the first one. And then, of course, he passed and couldn't do the sequel. The Oceans franchise taken over by the ladies. Oceans 8
That's
opens
right.
this weekend. What do you hear?
I hear really good things about it. Sandra Bullock plays George Clooney's character's sister in the movie, and she gathers together a bunch of ladies to rip off the Met party in New York and particularly steal a $150 million necklace that is hanging around the neck of Anne Hathaway. Cate Blanchett is in it. Rihanna is in it. Helena Bonham Carter is in it. Mindy Kaling. It's a tremendous cast. And, you know, heist movies are a lot of fun, and I like two of the three Oceans movies, the new ones, and then I really hope to like this one. And it looks terrific, and all the buzz that I'm hearing is very, very, very positive.
Oceans, the first and the third. The second one was not good.
That's exactly how I feel. It's 11 and 13 were good.
Yeah. So Ocean's 8 opening this weekend. Hereditary.
Yep. Oh, man. you know, this movie's getting a lot of hype.
Yeah,
saying that it is one of the most terrifying movies you'll ever see. It's this generation's The Exorcist. It will screw you up for life. It is, you know, terrifying. And let me just say this. Believe the hype. This is an absolutely unbelievably scary and terrifying movie. I loved every frame of it. It's the best movie I've seen all year. And if Toni Collette And it's hard for a horror movie to get, you know, Oscar recognition because, the Academy Awards don't really recognize horror movies very often. But she deserves not only a nomination, it's the best performance I've seen anybody give all year. She's incredible in it. And it is a scary movie about, the sins of the family. It starts out with Toni Collette is the mother of two teenage kids, married to Gabrielle Byrne, and her estranged mother dies. And it opens up this can of worms of what happened in the past with this family, how you deal with grief and mental illness, and the supernatural might come into it. It tightens the screws like no other movie I've seen in a long, long time. And there are genuinely, genuinely terrifying moments throughout this entire movie. And the movie also is about something. It's not just a cheap horror movie with jump scares and gore. This is a movie that really digs into your subconscious and gets under your skin. It's an unnerving, brilliant, brilliant movie that I can't recommend highly enough.
Yeah, well, you get actors like those two. It better be a good script. What about Hotel Artemis?
Yeah. Hotel Artemis is an incredible cast. It takes place in the future, 10 years in the future. L.A., there's a bunch of riots going on. Crime is at an all-time high. There are kingpins and gang members and violence everywhere. But Hotel Artemis is this place run by the woman known as the nurse, played by the great Jodie Foster. It's a 13-story hotel/hospital where criminals go to get fixed up. Meaning, from their injuries, from their gunshot wounds, without actually having to go to the hospital and keeping it under score. The cast includes Jeff Goldblum, Sterling K. Brown, Charlie Day, Dave Bautista, and it's about violence and craziness that happens inside this hotel when, rival gang members and criminals show up on Jodie Foster's doorstep. I hear good things about this. The trailer's fantastic, and the cast is great.
It's a cool idea. And Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Yeah, this is the documentary about Fred Rogers.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Beautiful day for a neighbor.
I have a feeling I'm probably going to cry when I see this movie because I love Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers. And it's about the beginnings of the show in Pittsburgh and about his career and about his life. It's basically, if you're a Mr. Rogers fan, you're going to have to see this movie. It played a whole bunch of film festivals and it's gotten fantastic reviews. And, everybody's a Mr. Rogers fan. Well, you better be.
I mean, he's one of the great people, period. And I'm not being even remotely flip about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the documentary, the Fred Rogers documentary. And that's out this weekend, too.
When's your next movie?
It's Tuesday, January. Or January. It's a long time from now.
It's Tuesday, June 12th.
It's Tuesday, June 12th. It's Back to the Future. It's part of the Robert Zemeckis Fest that we're doing. We are almost sold out. So if you want to see Back to the Future on the big screen, go to amctheaters.com. It's at the AMC Rosemont, formerly the Movie Co. Tuesday, June 12th. Movie starts at 8. $10 to get in. Parking is free. I highly suggest and ask you to get the tickets now because it's probably going to sell out. So amctheaters.com for Tuesday night.
All right, buddy. All the best. That's Nick DiGilio. Let's come back and get your headlines next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I've been stuck in
motion. Chuck Todd is on assignment. In other words, he's working news for NBC and appearing on television at this time. He'll be back with us next week. Amongst the politics we'll cover after 7, President Trump had another fact-free day yesterday. But one of the weirder things was at a FEMA event, he said that, and it seemed like it was an attempt to do the right thing. He said it didn't work out so well when the people in Texas took their boats out to watch Hurricane Maria. Well, that wasn't good. We'll play that back for you later. But then it also came out yesterday that in a phone call with the Prime Minister of Canada, when the Prime Minister of Canada said, look, I don't understand why you think we're a security threat to you. We are your safest ally. And President Trump said, well, wait a minute. Weren't you the people that tried to burn down the White House? No. No, in fact, Canada didn't try to burn down the
White
House.
Wait a second. I saw Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and that's exactly what happened.
No. Canada did not try to burn down the White House. It was still the Brits. But honestly, I mean, amongst all of us, don't you really feel like blaming somebody?
Blame Canada! Blame Canada! It seems that everything's gone wrong since Canada came along. Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
They're not even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches? Should we blame the fire? Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no! Blame Canada! Blame Canada! With all the hockey hullabaloo.
And that bitch Anne Marie, too.
Blame Canada! Shame on Canada! Oh, the smoke, we must stop the trash, we'll smash the laughter, and fun must all be undone. We must blame them and cause a fuss before somebody thinks of blaming us.
And until we get the Stanley Cup back, that's how we're going to feel. It's 6:47. Sandberg, you had the family graduation the other night?
We did.
Who graduated?
Catherine.
From?
Eighth grade.
Was there a big pomp circumstance and circumstances and pomp and things?
There was about an hour and 40-minute ceremony for all the kids to get mentioned.
So when they do the graduation ceremony, were people whooping it up?
Yeah. So they I think there's about 300 kids. And they brought them on stage with each advisory, which I think most people call a homeroom. You know, so about 25
kids. Oh, that's what an advisory
is? Yeah, about 25 kids on stage at a time. And then they do each name. And the assistant principal asked us repeatedly to hold your applause until the end out of respect for each graduate.
Because the idea is some kids might not have as many people applauding as other kids. So to make their day just as special, wait and applaud for everybody. All graduations try this.
They try it, yeah. And so, and I get, you know, there's a bunch of eighth graders in the room and there's some siblings, a couple of people, you know, like Mark Ryan. And then some kid screams out, "That's my brother!" And, you know, like, whatever. That I get it. But some of the adults were whooping and clapping when they were told not to after their kids' names were called.
Not helpful.
No, it's not helpful at all. And then it makes the kids giggle. And then it makes other kids want to do it. And I don't understand the parents that can't control themselves and listen to a simple rule that they said, please don't.
See, I've changed on this. I used to feel, I remember sitting at Ross's graduation for Bradley, and I used to think, I don't know about you, Dave, but I used to think, look, 4 years, it's a lot of work that goes into 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, whoop it up, whoop it up. But adults should listen to other adults who are making the rules for the right reasons. Hold your applause.
Because that's example you're setting for your other kids.
Yes.
We're sitting next to Patrick.
Yes.
If we start screaming when Catherine's name gets called,
you can't tell him not to.
No. And then also, like, the assistant principal, even though I'm not in school, when the ones that did whoop and holler, he would pause longer and give out a look. And it made me nervous.
Well,
I was in trouble.
Well, you're the rules follower.
I am.
So no wonder it made you nervous. But in a civilized society, there are rules that grown-ups should follow. There's your text question, Dave. What are the rules grown-ups should follow? Well, I'll throw one out to you right now. Don't park in a handicap space.
That's a good one.
Unless you have a placard, and you should.
Mm-hmm. I got one.
Yeah.
All right. If you're sitting in 21A mm-hmm. on an airplane
mm-hmm.
and row 20 gets up to leave the plane, but the guy from row 24 is elbowing his way past you mm-hmm. before you can get into the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that you're violating common courtesy and a rule.
That sounds very specific.
Yes,
it's quite a specific anecdote. But
I guess I didn't really need to give the row numbers, but I was trying to make a point.
I've got another airplane one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your overhead bag should fit in the overhead compartment above your seat. Not above my seat,
mm-hmm.
above your seat.
Right.
And if they don't fit in the overhead compartment above your seat because some other chucklehead used that space, then gently try to push chucklehead stuff aside so there's room for yours. But don't just stuff your stuff in the first overhead compartment that you see.
I'm with Dave on that row thing. You should get out in order. It's maddening. It's like a zipper. It should go 1-1-1-1, not these people that charge through.
And at the same
time, would you like music to go along with that system?
At the same time, if you have two things in the overhead, which you're not supposed to have,
right.
but don't wait till the very last minute to get up. And if you have access to the overhead before you get ready to get off the plane, but don't push your way past other people.
Especially when they tell you, you know, for the people who have a connecting flight, let them off first.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
some people just ignore that and say,
yeah.
forget them, and they whip off. Yeah.
Text number, and of course mine is, don't ever, 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 ever lean back if you're sitting in front of me.
I will say this.
I'm not your stylist. I'm not there to wash and do your hair.
That's more than a rule.
In my case, that's a law.
I will, about the graduation, I thought this was getting overblown. I didn't think eighth grade is really that big of a deal and whatever, except for once we were there and the kids are so excited. It was more special than I had given it credit. So,
well, Pat Brady is here. Pat, when you and I went to school, eighth grade would have been 74, probably 73, 74. 75. How do you know that?
I got a lot of weird things in my brain, but I do
remember
that. I
graduated eighth grade in 1990.
Yeah, okay, thanks. 1975, you and I graduated from eighth grade. I'm trying to remember. Oh, that's right. We didn't have a graduation.
You know, I went to the Catholic schools, and they did. It was a big deal.
You had an eighth grade graduation?
Oh, yeah, I've got pictures.
Well, me too, Pat. And it was a big deal in eighth grade. You know why it was a big deal at a Catholic school, though?
Not marry you.
Because you went to school at a Catholic school for all those 8 years.
The whole time, right? Kindergarten through eighth
grade. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
And the classes were usually smaller, and it was a long time to be with those people.
Well, that makes sense.
We only had 11 kids.
I had 8 kids in my graduating class, 8th grade at St. John the Baptist. Mm-hmm. 8 kids. One girl.
Hey, I had a graduation. My son Patrick graduated from St. Charles North over the weekend, and I had an experience that I never thought I would experience, but when he came out from graduation, he opened his diploma, it was blank.
What? Oh, yeah, they send him later.
Oh, they send
him? No. He has book fines.
Oh, it's book fines. Because in college, okay, they send him later.
Yeah, well, he was laughing about it. I go, that's not really funny.
So he got the stunt diploma.
Yeah, but he hands it to me. I go, let's take a picture of my blank diploma. I go, Pat, this is not really good.
It's not
news,
a bit.
I hate to break it to you. And I'm not paying these things.
No, book fines meaning?
I have no idea. Just
he didn't
no
turn
diploma
in a book
because
or something.
Of book fines.
Yeah.
It's like a library. It's a library.
Well, a library book, or is it something more significant? Like textbooks he didn't get back?
I didn't ask for an explanation. I just said, take care of it.
Fix it. Hey, Dad, look what I did.
He was so proud of it. I go, Pat, this is not funny.
All right, so rules adults ought to follow. All right, let's civilize society before 10 o'clock this morning. Text our line 312-917-200. Oh, you know what else? You can call that number now because we're going to come back. And, Pat, you can join us on this. It's a special edition of Know Your Monkeys.
Oh, great.
For Monkeys tickets. You want to win Monkeys tickets and play Know Your Monkeys? 312-981-7200.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, you know how this works. Let's get Dustin on. It's a true-false situation, Dustin. You simply have to tell me if the statement I make about a monkey is true or false, and you can ask for help from our fine expert monkey staff here and their extensive monkey experience. Dustin, where are you this morning?
I am on the road on my way to work.
What's your job? What do you do?
I work out in Downers Grove and doing stupid office stuff.
Is that the name of the company? Stupid office stuff?
Absolutely.
All right, then. The fastest primate on Earth is a Pitas monkey. It can reach speeds of up to 34 miles an hour. Let me just go around the room for the celebrity panel here. Dave, do you think that's true?
I believe it's true.
Pat, do you think that's true? You think it's what?
I believe that is false.
All right. Mary Vandeveld, true or false?
I'm kind of going true.
You think true, Steve?
It depends if they've just eaten a banana and maybe a little slower, but I'm going to say true.
Depending on the ripeness of the banana, yeah, that could exactly. make them faster.
Right.
Sounds like the majority think true. What do you think, Dustin?
I'm going to go with the majority here. Let's say true.
That's exactly right. Congratulations. Yeah. The Pitas monkey can run 34 miles an hour. Next. The Yukari is one of the rarest and most unusual looking of all New World monkeys. It looks similar to an orangutan. Its face is pink, but it turns bright red when it becomes excited or angry. It also makes a noise similar to a human laughing. Is that true or false?
I'm going to go with true again on this one.
That's exactly right. Look at you. You're just one answer away from winning all the prizes that I choose to
give. Has anyone ever swept all of these questions?
Never.
Your monkeys?
We're talking about a potential world record-setting performance here.
It could be a monkey sweep.
Unbelievable. All right, Dustin, I know you're nervous, but try to focus here. The capuchin monkey is the most common monkey and the most intelligent of the New World's monkeys. Is that true or false? What do you think, Mary?
Capuchin?
The capuchin.
It doesn't sound too made up. It sounds like it could be a monkey.
Steve?
I'm going true.
Oh, you're going true, Steve?
The capuchins are the great thinkers of the monkey world. I'm going to say true.
He doesn't know.
Pat?
Mickey Dolenz was the smartest monkey.
Okay, that doesn't help, Dave.
Yeah, true.
True. It seems like a big sweep of true here. What do you think?
I'm going with true again.
That's exactly right. What a run you're on. You know how you can tell the capuchin monkey is super smart? They do Rubik's Cubes all the time. You see them at the zoo. They got their own Rubik's Cube. Yeah, I don't make stuff up. And a bonus question. The spider monkey is the most acrobatic of the New World monkeys, known to leap across gaps as large as 35 feet. Is that true or false, Dustin? Can the spider monkey jump gaps of 35 feet? Dave, what do you think?
Well, think Spider-Man. Spider-Man could do it, so you would think Spider-Monkey could.
What's a fair point?
I would think so.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Dustin, you're unbelievable. You're practically a zoologist. That is absolutely amazing. Of course, that one you should have known last night if you're watching TV and you're watching Monkey Ninja Warriors. Remember that last night? That was
it was great, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, congratulations, buddy. You got the Monkeys tickets.
Excellent.
Let me see
Thank
here.
You.
I got a pair of tickets for you to the Monkees. Present the Mike and Mickey show with Mike Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz. I like the part when Mike throws his hat out in the crowd. It's June 14th at the Copernicus Center off I-90 and Lawrence Avenue. Get tickets at copernicuscenter.org. And tomorrow you could be the winner of a VIP package, which includes a mysterious 10-CD box set. And an upgrade on the tickets to your show. So there you go. Thank you, Dustin. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you. I listen every day. You're the best.
You're a good man. Good luck doing stupid office work today.
Thanks, man.
All right. Hold on. It is news time now, and Bridget Gaynor will join us shortly. Pat Brady, as you know, is here. House Minority Leader Jim Durkin will be here. We've got a bunch of things we can talk to him about that as well. Got some news out of Springfield from yesterday and more sound from the last 24 hours, including Rudy Giuliani's wheels continuing to come off.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, and I say, it's all right.
Little 713, always nice to see our friend Bridget Gaynor. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fine. And how about you, Pat Brady? You doing all right?
I'm living the dream, Steve, just like you.
Brett Baer was in for the latest Lincoln Forum hoedown?
Yeah, Tuesday night. He was great. He spoke about a book. He's got a book out, 3 Hours in Moscow. It's about the summit with Reagan and Gorbachev and Reykjavik. Oh. And he was very good, very engaging, stayed around, autographed books for about an hour afterwards. But fun. It was fascinating, his perspective as a young reporter on what actually essentially ended the Cold War.
Did he talk about the state of Fox News?
He did not, but he was asked questions about his favorite people on the network. He was but very clear in that there is the opinion wing of Fox News, and then there's the news wing, and he was very clear that he's the news wing. He did make a statement. He goes, I have called President Trump every week since he's been in office to get an interview, and he said he's going to do it one of these days, and it's going to be however Trump would say it, but he did say huge. Yeah. But he hasn't been able to get him on. Yeah, he and Chris Wallace have done that.
Yeah, there are journalists at Fox. There just aren't that many. Shep Smith, Brett Baer, Chris Wallace, and a handful of others.
He's a very impressive. Brett Baer was a very impressive guy and a very nice guy. And he's got a big Illinois connection. I think his wife is from Barrington, so he knew all the Barrington trivia.
It must be tough for those guys. You know, you're trying to walk this middle line, and either you leave or, you know, you've got a platform.
And it's a pretty good gig.
It's a pretty good gig.
Yeah. Not so easy to walk out of. All right.
It's along those lines. CNN's getting the same way, though. If you watch it from
Well, you can break CNN down from top to bottom as well. And the primetime stuff at CNN, absolutely, you could call that leaning opinion at the bare minimum.
But that's the discussion we've had in the past. That is opinion from 7 to 10. And I think people mistake that as news. And it's not really news. It's opinion.
I would argue that Chris Cuomo is not an opinion guy. He's a balls and strikes guy, but he's also an obnoxious pain. So sometimes it's hard to tell.
I agree. But he is pretty sharp, though. He has some pretty good questions.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah. But would you want to be caught in an elevator with him?
Do you want to take a road trip? That's always my thing. Do I want to take a road trip with this person?
That's the test. Would you travel with him in a car across America?
Mm-mm.
I want to play you guys some sound from yesterday. It was a rather amazing day.
It was.
Yesterday. It started yesterday morning when Kellyanne Conway was on CNN, speaking of that, with John Berman. This is a little bit of a longer piece, but she's talking about how calling out Trump's lies is problematic for the administration. So here's that clip from yesterday.
Respectfully, I don't think this has helped CNN. Your ratings are way down.
This isn't, because you know,
I hit a nerve there, John, but let's be fair. You like to say lie and the president and Sarah in the same sentence. Excuse me. This is not benefiting you. You're not getting new viewers who want to hear this junk and this bunk because you don't have proof and you're trying to let your viewers think that this man was not elected fairly and squarely. You know he was. You know not a single vote was changed. You do give that woman a platform when she comes. What are the Clintons doing to help America, by the
way?
Listen, you're giving her a platform.
I'm not asking. Ask you about Hillary Clinton. All I was asking about was what the truth. All I was asking, Kellyanne, is about what the truth is here. And I appreciate you coming on again to make your case.
Do you have any evidence that a single vote was impacted?
I don't know. There are investigations going on right now, and we will find out what the special counsel has to say. Pure and simple.
Again, the statement is that calling out Trump's lies as a journalist hurts your ratings, so therefore don't do it. It's an interesting scorecard. A little bit later in the afternoon, President Trump hosted a FEMA briefing. This was largely about the recovery efforts after the hurricane season last year and the beginning of the hurricane season this year. This is a quickie. Joe, give me this one. It's Trump at the FEMA briefing from yesterday. Got it. Trump at the FEMA briefing.
The brand of the Coast Guard has been something incredible, what's happened. Saved 16,000 people, many of them in Texas, for whatever reason that is. People went out in their boats to watch the hurricane. That didn't work out too well.
Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, said nobody went out in their boats. Nobody went out in their boats to watch a hurricane.
Was it the hurricane watching party? No.
Well, the interesting thing about that, even as a statement, is a hurricane is a giant dark storm. There's no
on the water.
There's no funnel cloud to watch. There's you don't really watch anything. You just hide
pouring
and hope
rain
for the best.
Yeah.
Rudy Giuliani is in Israel, and he just can't help himself. He is Trump's personal attorney, and as the personal attorney, his job would be to represent Trump based on what his attorney would represent him on, not to talk about other stuff. Here's Rudy Giuliani yesterday. See if this helps the North Korean summit. Go.
Everyone said, well, if you get tough on China on trade, China's not going to help you with North Korea. Well, somehow, North Korea, after he canceled the summit because they insulted the vice president, they insulted his national security advisor, and they also said they were going to go to nuclear war against us. They were going to defeat us in a nuclear war. He said, well, we're not going to have a summit under those circumstances. Well, Kim Jong-un got back on his hands and knees and begged for it, which is exactly the position you want to put him in. That's what has to happen with the Palestinian Authority. They have to be seeking peace. You got to change the dynamic and put the pressure on them.
You think Kim Jong-un seems like a guy who wants to be accused of getting on his hands and knees?
Well, most people like that.
Is that? Well, that's a fair
point. Including dictators.
That's a fair point. Is this something we should, you know, maybe ascribe some sort of strategy to, that they're trying to get the summit canceled again? Or is this just Rudy with the rails, off the rails, you know, not standing between the white lines at all?
There was an old-time lobbyist in Springfield named Bill Luking, and he gave me two pieces of advice. One is longer, one short. But the short one was, it's rarely the vast conspiracy. It's mostly just people being idiots. So what often this comes to my mind as I'm trying to figure out what people are doing.
And that's a bipartisan truth,
that
by the way.
That is a bipartisan truth. Global.
Yes.
That is global.
It really is.
For all this nonsense, which I completely agree, I've been very vocal. I think he does a lot of things that are idiotic. He's at 44% right now. And
we're talking about Giuliani.
I want to talk about Trump, because if you're talking about part of a larger strategy, and I saw a bumper sticker last week in Springfield on a pickup truck that said, and I know there's a lot of Trump haters, that said, the only thing Donald Trump did to me was cut my taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's at 44%, actually higher than Obama was at this point. So to your question, is there a strategy? I don't know. But there is those statements, as idiotic as I think they are, have an appeal to a certain part of this country that he is working hard.
At what point do you understand, you, the collective you, understand the damage that gets done for the greater sake of he cut my taxes? In other words, the personal versus
that's
public.
That's a good question. But if history's any judge, in the 92 election, the theme was it's the economy, stupid. And Bill Clinton, when he was impeached for having sex with a 22-year-old intern.
He had quite a week as well. He should have been thrown out of office.
But the point is, when he got impeached, I think his numbers were in the high 50s and he went out in the 60s. So I'm not sure. But if history's any judge, I'm not sure if the people ever care about what might be perceived long-term damage or idiocy, as long as the economy is good. And so we'll wait and see. And I agree with you completely on the points, but the reality is it's not transferring.
Yeah, but
into
there's a big difference between you're messing up in your personal life and you're embarrassing yourself, and you're embarrassing the office, obviously, in the case of Clinton, or then you're putting kind of peace and geopolitical issues at risk because you have to show your manhood. I mean, if you're going to have to display one of those things, don't do it on the world stage.
Okay, but here's the flip side of that. A lot of people see that as, you know what, the biggest problem that the president inherited from President Obama, told him that President Trump, is going to be North Korea. Now they're talking about some kind of denuclearization. So there has been progress made. I agree with you completely on the method, but to a lot of people, it appears that it's working.
But this clown car, you know, the idea that this clown car is going to safely navigate a nuclear summit next week is kind of frightening.
Yeah, but I agree with you. And again, I don't agree with any of the approaches he's taken. But if he comes out of this summit with a deal, he's going to be a hero.
The last piece, which is relevant, and also the Bill Clinton piece. Bill Clinton's apologies mean nothing. Bill Clinton needs to stand up, look in the camera, and say to America, I was a 47-year-old grown man. She was a 21-year-old intern. I'm not going to speak for whether or not she made a mistake. I'm going to speak for the mistake I made. And I abused my position at the time. Get off her back. Allow her to live her life. Hire for a job if she's qualified. Marry her if you fall in love with her, but allow her to live her life. And he's never said anything close to that.
No.
And in the power that he has and the approval rate that he still has, he could change her life by doing the right thing. And finally, Rudy Giuliani on Stormy Daniels, who has filed a lawsuit against...
Hey, Dave, she's in town next week, right? 14th yep. through 16th?
Why do you say right? Like Dave's keeping track of her schedule.
I saw the billboard on the way in.
Stormy Daniels filed a lawsuit against her first attorney, who was apparently working with, what's his name?
Cohen.
He was in cahoots, as my father would have said. Well, you just got to hear this. This is Giuliani talking about Stormy Daniels.
I know Donald Trump, and look at his three wives, right? Beautiful women, classy women, women of great substance. Stormy Daniels. So, I think she...
We have to respect on this stage every woman.
Yes, I respect porn stars. Don't you respect porn stars? Or do you think that porn stars desecrate women? Do you think that porn stars don't respect women and therefore sell their bodies? So, yes, I respect all human beings. I even have to respect, you know, criminals. But I'm sorry, I don't respect a porn star the way I respect a career woman or a woman of substance or a woman who has great respect for herself as a woman and as a person and isn't going to sell her body for sexual exploitation. So, Stormy, you want to bring a case? Let me cross-examine you. Because the business you were in entitles you to no degree of giving your credibility any weight. And secondly, explain to me how she could be damaged. I mean, she has no reputation. If you're going to sell your body for money, you just don't have a reputation. Maybe old-fashioned, I don't know.
She's barely a human being. How do we even allow her to walk the earth? Again, look at the three wives. Look at Stormy Daniels. You think Rudy missed the memo? That's Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal attorney. And by the way, you may feel the same way, that because she's a porn star, she doesn't deserve any respect on any level. But she, as an American citizen, she can file any lawsuit she wants, and the judge and the law will actually decide whether or not it's worthy. Rudy Giuliani publicly cheated on two of his three wives, and the man he's represented did the grab him by the P-word thing. I don't think either one of them has any moral high ground here. Oh, and by the way, if you didn't sleep with a porn star, why'd you pay $130,000? Just because you're generous? So that's the world we're living in, kids. It's got to get better. 7:25. We'll come back with these two. That's Bridget and what is your name again? Pat Brady.
Yep.
All right.
Stand I know when Bridget's here, I don't exist. That's
well, at least not as much.
Exactly.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Don't let me down. That steady old Chevy has seen me happy and seen me sad.
Coming up on 7:30, a quick reference to yesterday. Obviously, you can go to WGNradio.com/contest if you're paying attention here, kids, and win the Centennial Blue Chevrolet. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com as well. Just click on the banner for the Centennial Blue Chevrolet. So anyway, yesterday we were at Channel 9, Lou Manfredini, Dan Hampton, and I, and a crew of thousands, to do some promotional videos for the contest. And boy, Hamp looks great. I think he could probably play again. He's just in phenomenal shape.
I think he's used up his eligibility.
Or he's passed his 4 years.
Yes.
But we did a thing in the back of the truck, in the bed of the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to spoil the surprise, but the window is open in the back of the truck, and there's a script, and Lou says something, and Hamp says something. And then I say something, but I stick my giant head through the window. So I think the kids will really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
Inside the truck where I was yesterday, it was about 412 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I gave for this contest. But I think the videos turned out pretty good. And, you know, the truck is fantastic. I got in a truck yesterday, and I felt like stealing it. I mean, it's fantastic.
Did you guys ride over there in the Centennial Blue Chevy Silverado?
No, the Chevy people aren't crazy. No, they're not going to let us give, you know, actually drive it.
Were you wearing makeup, and was Hamp wearing makeup?
Well, as you know, I always wear makeup. Well, I never leave the house without it, and I usually update it several times a day. But there was a point where Hamp, and I don't know if we got a still photo of this, but Hamp was sitting, and when you shoot these things and you shoot close-ups, the other people that are in the thing aren't involved. You do them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So Hamp is sitting in the truck bed in the corner, and he sort of had his chin on his hand at one point. He looked like Rodin the Thinker, but after Rodin did a lot of time in the weight room. And then he looked like his own monument, a monument of Hamp that ought to be built at Lake Forest, just chiseled, this big, giant dude in the back of the truck.
Sounds great. I can't wait to see it.
Lou Manfredini made the point that if Lou and Hamp and I got in the back, we could test the towing capacity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the payload. Anyway, it's a fabulous truck, and I really want you to be able to win it. You can continue to send us your Silverado spotting. When you see Silverados on the road, send us the pictures. By the way, we'll block out the license plates and any home phone numbers. But we'll post those Silverado pictures so you can all get Silverado ginned up. And go to ChevyDriveChicago.com or WGNRadio.com, and we'll kick you over there as well to register for the contest for the Centennial Blue Chevrolet. Speaker Durk, or I should say, well, I made him speaker. How about that? A promotion. Minority Leader Durkin is coming up. And Pat Brady and Bridget Gaynor are here. What's going on at the Cook County Board?
Things are good. You know, it's a couple long meetings. Yesterday, I introduced something about getting the sheriff's office to look at doing the background checks for CPS, kind of centralize that and get.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in detail coming up.
Yeah. Okay. And the board is good. You know, we're moving forward with a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of conversation about the hospital bills. You know, are we paying enough of them? How's that going forward? We allowed video poker in some of the suburbs, so I'm not a huge fan of that, but, you know, moving on.
And Springfield?
Wrapped up, signed the budget last week, and so it's all good. I think there's a lot of good feelings that we can kind of move forward and run the government. I think, and Leader Durkin's going to be on a second here. He was very instrumental in getting done.
I also want to get both of your takes here coming up in a few minutes on the longevity of one Mike Madigan, as his right-hand man is now out of work after being accused, and apparently truthfully, because he stepped down, of significant sexual harassment. So we'll get to that. 7:33 headlines in a moment on 7:20 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 7:20 WGN.
Bridget Gaynor's here, Cook County Board, and Pat Brady's here. Pat, your company is?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
On the phone, the Minority Leader from the Illinois House. It's Minority Leader Durkin. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Pat, Commissioner.
Hey, good morning. How are you? Great to see you the other day at the Chamber Breakfast.
It's a nice event.
Yes.
Am I invited to that?
Mr. Lee?
This is real bipartisan. If like there's one Republican, the rest are Democrats. So,
that's bipartisan. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's how it works in Chicago. Yeah.
You know how I feel about the budget. I don't think any of you get to take a victory lap, but I appreciate the work you did on getting it done.
Thank you. No, there's no victory lap. There's no USC Trojan marching band that's going to lead us out of the Capitol. But no, I look, we did our job, and that's what when we start every January, we have to be able to, by the Constitution, get a budget passed. When, how about this, balanced also? And we did this for the first time in 15 years. So we shouldn't be high-fiving and, you know, doing all the silly stuff that people do, but we did our job for the first time. I'm not saying that we did everything we could. It's not the perfect budget, but we have a budget that was negotiated. It was compromised between both sides, and it was signed into law. This is what we should be doing more often. And I hope that the Democrat leadership opens the door for the Republican minority to be able to participate in future issues. We did this with education last summer, and we did it with the budget. And you know, I've said time and time again, guys, bring us in. You know, we got talent, and we can work together, and we can compromise, and we can get some things done. But the Democrat leadership, I think, tends to be a little bit myopic when it comes to negotiating on major issues.
Is that what happened this time, Jim? It seemed that there was a lot more cooperation and agreement to the whole process for January.
There absolutely was, and it was mainly driven by the rank-and-file members who were not going to put up with an impasse, which we've seen over the past 3 years. And I'm glad that members were stern with their leaders to say, get this done. Otherwise, you know, there's going to be consequences down the road. So, but more importantly, how can we just do this to people in Illinois? And just, you know, because of political bickering, we're going to continue with uncertainty for education, for public safety, and everything else we fund in state government. It's just fundamentally wrong, and it's morally wrong as well. So I'm glad that we got this done, but we didn't touch pensions. We haven't addressed our backlog of bills, and those are equally as troubling as having an impasse. And that's what our credit agencies have come down and said, Sure. Guys, yeah, got a lot more work to do.
So, Jim, what do you think was different this time? Do you think it's that there's, you know, the speaker's got issues that are on his mind? Do you think it's that people think, okay, there's a governor's election coming up, maybe there'll be a change of pace? Like, what's different now than the last couple of years?
A little bit of everything. People are burnt out from making no progress.
Okay.
And I have to think that there's the campaign is something that people are looking at as well. And, you know, there's issues going on within some of the caucuses that the more, you know, we're together down in Springfield, the more it can create problems for some people. So I think it's just a little bit of everything. But most importantly, I think people just don't want to see the state slide down the, you know,
the banister without it being greased. The governor made some news this week. He was on this show, and he said that he wanted to thank Speaker Madigan for doing his part in getting this done. I must have missed the part where Madigan said, I'd like to thank the governor as well.
Well, I was there, and that was on Monday, and people weren't sure if the governor was, that was tongue-in-cheek, but he was serious. He was serious, and, you know, the speaker did work with us, and sometimes it's working with the speaker can be a bit of a challenge, but this time he did work to negotiate with us. And as I said earlier, I hope he will do this more often with us. And the two biggest issues we've dealt with in the last 2 years were able to find compromise. We're able to get the bill signed, and that was on education reform and also this next fiscal year's budget. So my gesture to him is, why don't we do more of this?
Hey, Jim, political side, the commutations are supposed to come out today. We might be Governor Blagojevich might be back. I mean, is he a viable contender? Because he can run now. What do you think?
No, we prohibited him from running based on legislation that we passed after he was thrown out of office.
Woo! Close one.
This is crazy. I'm sorry, but you know, there's some people who are sympathetic to the former governor, but I'm not one of them. I was served on an impeachment committee. I was the ranking Republican on it. I read and I heard testimony about everything that he was alleged to have committed. Each one of those allegations proved up in a courtroom and were affirmed on appeal all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. For the president to suggest that he's going to commute his sentence is undermines the integrity of the criminal justice system, of the due process, but also what does it say about what the president thinks about public corruption in Illinois? But But here's another fact I think people need to understand. When Rob Blagojevich was governor, he failed to act on over 96% of the requests for pardons or commutations that came to his desk. Now he's coming back and saying, you know what, give me the, you know, I'm deserved of the this extraordinary powers of the president of the United States. So there's a great hypocrisy there. And I think that that's wrong.
Do you think it's going to happen?
I do. I do. And but I'm not quite sure what, you know, who has more information on it, but maybe J.B. Pritzker, from based on what I've been watching on TV, he talks to the president, the former governor, more than anybody. So,
do you think that all these announced commutations and pardons, part of me feels like when he talks about the president, meaning talks about pardoning Blagojevich, there's a lot of big celebrities in that mix. He talks about pardoning himself. He talks about, so maybe that when he talks about, he goes so far over here on who's going to be pardoned. When he just pardons Manafort and anyone in his circle, people are going to think, oh, okay, well, that was kind of reasonable. He didn't go as far as he could have. And so
he's turning it into a game show now.
I think that there's something to throwing out all of these bullface names. And then when he scales it back to the people who are actually in his circle that could, you know, that he cares about, then it's like, oh, okay, I guess he was reasonable.
Right. Yeah, he sets the bar.
Yeah.
He sets the bar. I mean, it's every day the bar is set at a different level. And but, you know, there's people who are deserving of this type of relief.
Absolutely.
From the president or governor. I mean, someone gets picked up with a couple of joints, you know, 15 years ago, and, you know, they have that hanging on their record. I mean,
like Cochran.
People deserve it.
I mean, right. I never thought I'd be calling out Kim Kardashian. But, like, she has been pushing the commutation of this woman who, you know, first-time drug offender has been in since 1996. To your point, that's exactly what that process is for. It's
but
for
honestly,
us to have a little mercy.
It's a cliche because it's a cliche, but when I saw Kim Kardashian walking into the White House, and she did a good thing. She really did do a good thing in this regard. But when Kim Kardashian walks into the White House to have a meeting with the president's Donald Trump, how does your head not explode?
I know. It was coming out of my mouth, I thought, okay, this might be a mistake, but I don't know.
Hey, if Blagojevich gets out, can we do some sort of prisoner exchange? I had a friend of mine that was suggesting that's a possibility.
Oh, my gosh. I don't think you can answer that one. Oh, boy.
All right. Serious question. Serious question.
Yes.
Yesterday, Tim Mapes is removed at the urging of Mike Madigan. And I'm not, you know, I mean, you know how I feel about Mr. Madigan. But the direct question here is, how is the speaker unaware of what his chief is doing if, in fact, Mapes did what he's accused of doing?
I don't have an answer for that, Steve. That's a matter for the men and women who vote him in every 2 years have to make that decision. I what happens in behind those doors over on the third floor of the Capitol building, not a lot of people get back there, but the allegations are very disturbing. They're very troubling. I'm glad that he resigned, but it's really unfortunate that we still have allegations of a hostile workplace, and that is just so intolerable. And I just... we have to do better, and you know we can. But we also can pass all the laws we want, and all the regulations, and that's not going to change anybody's mind. So, again, this is an issue for voters, but it's an issue for the men and women that elect their leaders in every 2 years, and the House Democrats, the men and women, they're the ones that need to be able to determine how they are going to move forward and how the future is going to look for them. I'm sure there's going to be more shoes that'll drop in the future, and it's just going to be a continuing black eye on the environment of Springfield. And, you know, it calls into question, do you want your children working down there?
Yeah.
At any time, when it was a very noble job, and everybody says, I'd love to be able to work in the legislature, and, you know, it's people are going to think twice. And that's really unfortunate, and it's very sad.
Huh. Good to talk to you. Appreciate it. And be well and enjoy that highly bipartisan event you're going to this morning where you're the only Republican. Good luck with it.
He's used to it. He's used to it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. I want to talk to you guys about the Tribune investigation and the investigative series. And these. And it's a horrible story, these sexual assaults in CPS schools. We'll do that in a second.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Text question of the day is, what grown-up rules should we be following that we're not following? 773, remove your backpack when you're standing in line in the aisle for the CTA trains. Every time you shuffle and turn to let someone by you, you hit a seated person in the head.
847, if the light's yellow and no cars are moving to the other side of the intersection, don't go in the intersection. 815, get out of the passing lane if you're not passing. There's tons of car ones here. Anyway, we'll get to more of these coming up. Rules grown-ups should be following, and they're not. Terrible story this week that came out, and thank God it did, because now some action can be taken about it. Chicago Public Schools, sexual assault, sexual abuse of students. Somehow administrators, teachers, the front lines missed it. The mayor said it falls on his desk. He's responsible. They're going to fix it. Janice Jackson, the school CEO, has come out with a memo, a list of several things that they have put into play immediately that we can get into later on in the program. And, you know, we're not the only town that has this. L.A. just did an $88 million settlement not long ago for a sex abuse case involving 30 students. And this has been going on for well more than the 10 years the investigative report covers. But let me start with you, Bridget. This is horrific. This is a nightmare.
Of course. And what we've seen it play out in other, every institution that has the care of children, this is a risk. And so you know that. And we've seen it play out in the church across this country over the and the world, to be honest, over the last decades. And so it's not like you don't have a roadmap, but the roadmap has to be total accountability and total transparency and taking responsibility. And the thing that's more troubling is there's five or six people up the line who knew this was going on, but no one really had the guts to say anything. And I think sometimes in politics, it's only when somebody breaks the dam. It's like we were talking about with Madigan. Someone comes forward, and then all of a sudden it all rushes in. But it's the same playbook of hide the ball, protect the institution first, last, and always, victim shaming, you know, all that stuff. And so, you know, we did yesterday, I put in at the board that the sheriff's office should be doing the background checks because you need a separation of powers. You need not all the information to be rolling up to the same kind of political power structure.
Well, I also think that's why the teachers union or the Chicago Public Schools in general shouldn't be doing an independent investigation because they're not independent.
Of course they're not. You can't investigate yourself.
Yes.
No. Institutions, we see it all the time, they protect themselves. Even if people are saying it's well me. I mean, I talked to someone from the board who's on the board on Sunday, and I said, well, you know, this whole idea that you let people leave and go work at another school system and didn't tell the school system that they were a predator. And the response is, well, it's complicated. No, there's a lot of things in life that are complicated. That's 100% not complicated.
It's nothing more black and white.
It's just easier for you. That's why you did it. And this is an operational fail as much as a leadership fail.
Pat?
Who gets fired and when, and what the impact's going to be on the mayoral race? I think those are two big questions. To me, when they say we're going to roll out this plan to fix this, no, you're fired. You're gone. We're bringing in new people. I don't understand.
Who do you fire first?
I'd go as far as you could. To me,
I mean, do you go to Janice Jackson and start backwards?
That's a right start.
But. You know what? Look, she has been there a limited amount of time in the CEO role, and I actually think she's really good, and she's really strong, and she's a good leader. But to Pat's point, nobody pays attention until someone gets fired, because then it's just a bunch of moving papers around.
But here's the thing about what you just said. It is so black and white that this is a question of character. If you see a child being abused and you say nothing, well, God have mercy on your soul, because that's you.
Well, this is what the Catholic Church did back in the day, and they moved Cardinal Lay over to Rome. They didn't. Somebody's head needs to roll. And the public schools want to be in their own control. They're not capable of it right now. There needs to be a consent decree or some kind of oversight on this, because they are not. To me, this is the most egregious thing you could do, besides giving them a poor education, is subject them to a sexual predator.
Obviously, the mayor can't be at every school making sure every kid is safe, so the schools have to take some responsibility for this organizationally. But what should the mayor have done, or what should the mayor do, aside from what we've already talked about?
Look, it's you create a culture that people either know what's going on and they think there's consequences, or they don't. And, you know, when you run things out of the press office instead of operations, this is how this stuff starts to fall apart. There's no scenario in which multiple people at each school, everybody knows who the creep is in any institution. You just do. When you're you could be at any employer, it's the same thing. You know, when I look at this, I think it starts at the top, and it's not just the mayor's office. This I think augurs this idea that you've got to have an elected school board, because at some point you have to have not every bit of power and control rolling up to one person who's going to be protecting their own reputation and their own back. And so, you know, I think to Pat's point, you've abdicated your right to police yourself. And this is where you need an elected school board, and you need a lot more independent voices in there who don't all worry about pleasing one person.
Should we hear from Mayor Daley on this?
You probably, you know, I mean, this every time you have children in institutions, this is a risk. I think the investigation goes back 10 years. And so, you know, I'm sure.
But yeah, point being, it's previous to 2007. Since obviously, previous, he was still in office then.
Since they opened up CPS.
The teachers' union's too strong. Public sector union's too strong. There's too much worry about what's going to happen with the union and less worry about. And this goes not just to teachers. This goes down in Springfield where the public sector unions, FDR didn't even want public sector unions. They have too much power in the state.
I just don't understand how anyone could be aware of a child being abused and not do something about it.
Or worst is push it along.
Well, can we say this? Let's forget about the I'm not sure defense.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to not be sure. And if there's nobody to report what you're not sure of to, then that's a problem. Because I should be able, if I think somebody is Jerry Sandusky, I should be able to go to an authority figure and say, I don't know, but I got a real bad feeling about this, right. And I think you guys should look into it. Does that exist?
Obviously not, because it's obviously it was a culture that said, don't rock the boat, don't make waves, don't kind of create problems, because I'm with you. You often have a feeling about people, and mm-hmm. you know, your feeling's not always right, but even if it's half right, then you go through the process and you figure it out. But if it was in one school or two schools, you could say, okay, well, that's a different story. It was absolutely pervasive across. And so what it tells you is nobody had any interest in hearing any of this stuff, or else there would have been a hotline. There would have been more management control.
Just beyond the whole bad part of it, how much legal exposure? It's in the hundreds of millions by the time this is all done.
It's 500 young people, and we don't even know the half of it because those are the ones that came out now. But you got to look at what's happening at CPS. You've got the state is stepping in to take over special ed. Okay, so they've lost control of special ed because they weren't taking care of the most vulnerable children. Then the schools are filthy. We only know that because Lauren Fitzpatrick at the Sun-Times did this exhaustive study where they found, like, they did inspections, but only when everyone knew the inspector was coming. And now you have sexual abuse scandal. It's operational fail across the board. So, yes, it's moral fail, and yes, it's a leadership issue. But this is stuff that falls apart in it 17 different levels, and it's because you cannot execute and you cannot operate. And the system and every one of these things, what they have in common is the dirtiest schools were the poorest schools, special ed serves right. the most vulnerable, and most of these young girls were lower income or black or Latino, and that's who got abused.
Well, you know, I have no doubt in my mind that Mayor Daley cares about kids and would personally step in if he had seen the same as Rahm Emanuel. But I want to hear from Mayor Daley, and I'd like to hear from the appointed school board members on how they missed it.
I agree.
Good to see both of you. Sorry about ending on such a down note, but obviously it's important. Pat?
It's very important.
Lincoln Forum website?
LincolnForum.org. Thank you. We're lining up some debates, and hopefully we'll get Ms. Bridget Gaynor to come on sometime and talk about all the great things she's doing. It's going great. Thank you.
She doesn't just show up for just anybody. You know?
Well, we can get Jim Durkin because there could be one person, and then it could be bipartisan.
One Republican.
That's bipartisan. Yes. That's exactly right. Cook County Board, and, you know, maybe sometime an announcement of some kind. I don't know, like you're going on vacation.
Exactly,
or,
right.
Last time you got a new dog, right?
Yeah, and then there, but baseball season's starting. So mm-hmm. we got, you know, someone starting mm-hmm. baseball. Mm-hmm. Eighth grade graduation.
So you did actually announce something today.
I did actually announce it.
Okay. Thanks to both of you for coming in. News next, 720 WGN.
Thanks, guys.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dean is off. We are sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. Good morning to Dr. Tim and his staff out there. Fine folks. At 8:18, it's our friend Kelty Knight from Entertainment Tonight. And, you know, Sandberg's here, Mary Vandeveld's here. There's nothing worse than hearing a dude talk about stuff he doesn't know about. And, Kelty, this Kate Spade story is awful. But first, the two or three of you here, Mary, if you want to jump in, how big a deal was Kate Spade for people that don't know?
I mean, man, it was a rite of passage to be, you know, a young girl and get your first Kate Spade handbag. You know, it was like the accessible thing for women. And what made it so different is that in the 1990s, when Kate Spade launched her brand, it was all about these legacy brands like Yves Saint Laurent and Gucci that had been around for, you know, all these years. And they were at the time sort of old and stodgy. And Kate Spade came came out with these bright, whimsical, fun, colorful, like eccentric designs that were so fresh. And she was an absolute, you know, mind-blowing game changer as far as accessories go in the business. Isn't that right, ladies?
It was. And you know what she did? I bought one of her first sandbag, and I bought the nylon one. And prior to that, I would have only ever wanted a leather bag, but she was using different fabrics and things that made you look at it differently. Like, oh, this is, I can look good and not have a $2,500 bag, you know?
Right. It gave you just this, you felt like it was the first time. I remember getting my first bag, and I remember the first time I felt like a grown-up woman. You know what I mean? Like, I got this. So it's a horrible, horrible story, and something we see, you know, far too much in fashion. Lorenz Scott, Alexander McQueen, you know, the fashion world, and I've spent many years covering Fashion Week. I will say it is quite a cruel and harsh world to live in. There is some truth to that movie, The Devil Wears Prada. This is a cutthroat, very competitive industry. And so, you know, even though she had sold the Kate Spade brand in 2006, and so was no longer a part of that and had been working on her own separate brand and her daughter's namesake, you know, it's still a hard world to live in. And so it just happens too often, and it's just really sad. And you have to think about her 13-year-old daughter. You know, it's reported that she did leave a suicide note and said, you know, this isn't your fault, ask your dad. But still, when you're 13 years old and your mom commits suicide,
it's awful.
You know, it changes your life forever.
I saw the letter that Andy, her husband, in the New York Times this morning, clarifying some details about things. And he had said that they were living separately simply because they needed a break. Nobody was, like, filed for legal separation. And they were co-parenting and still vacationing together. And that she was working on herself for the last 5 years trying to get help.
Yeah, and I think the idea that you could put this off on divorce is a big mistake. And a lot of the reporting has been a little lazy about it. Depression doesn't care who you are, how rich you are, how poor you are, or whether you're married or divorced or in the middle of it. That's part of her story, and it can be a tripwire for things. But the early reporting on this sort of blamed the husband in some ways. And, you know, there's a lot more to the story than that.
Always. There always is.
So what about the extended family here? David Spade is the brother-in-law?
Yeah, and so actually we have covered a bunch of events. You know, Kate was a well-awarded woman in the fashion industry, and we actually have a beautiful interview with David, who was very close to Kate because she was married to his brother, and he gave her tons of awards. You know, these Hollywood things, they always want like a celebrity to show up and give the awards. So there's so many speeches where David had said such wonderful things, and he talked a lot about Kate's personality and that she was so funny and that she was so full of life, and her designs you know, really showed that. And so that's why this is even more tragic, is that she was, you know, at some point in her life a very happy, cheerful, funny, life of the party kind of gal. But like you said, you know, these kind of mental illness things, they go unchecked, and even though you're working on yourself, it's just the thing you can't control. You know, it's horrible.
There's another rumor that came out in the last couple of days that she had a certain fascination with what Robin Williams ended up going through and how he ended his own life. Is that myth or fact?
So far, we haven't been able to confirm that. Of course, it's a really hard fact to confirm. But again, I think that, like you said, when something like this happens in Hollywood, you always want to look and compare it to the other Hollywood stories. And I think each one of these stories is unique. You know, Robin Williams had depression, but it also was stated that he had Parkinson's disease and different kinds of things going on. So I don't know that there's a correlation between these two.
What else going on in show business today?
I mean, can we talk about some happy news? We saw pictures of Beyonce and Jay-Z's twins.
Oh, is that right? How much did it cost you?
Well, it didn't cost us anything. It just cost us a ticket to their concert. So, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce went back out on tour for On the Run 2. It started in the UK last night. And so during the show, all the people that were in England and saw this show have been tweeting and Instagramming photos. So apparently at the end of the show, they sing the song Forever Young, and there's video footage which looks allegedly, reportedly, like a vow renewal, where Beyonce's in a veil and a white dress. They're surrounded by Mama Tina, the kids, and the baby twins. And so it looks like there has been a vow renewal. Of course, Beyonce and Jay-Z are never going to tell us what actually went on, if they stage it for the show or if this is real footage from their lives. But Beyonce and Jay-Z have shown us most of their real life during their concerts. They hold it. They don't tell anything to the right. press. They don't do any interviews. They hold it until you go to one of their concerts. So this is really interesting.
It is interesting. All right, one more.
Oh, gosh. Do you want to talk about Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez? Do you guys like them together?
I just want everyone to be happy. And if J-Lo and A-Rod are happy, I just don't know how they leave the house without looking in mirrors and reflective surfaces all day. I figured they'd bump into doors.
They are so good looking. Yeah. You know what it is, though? You know the secret, Steve, is they both wear those mirrored aviator sunglasses.
So they can
so when
always.
They're looking at each other, they're just looking back at themselves. Well, Jennifer Lopez was on Kimmel last night, and she was talking about, you know, the one thing that could break them up because they seem like headed to the altar, in my opinion, at this moment. And J-Lo said that A-Rod better not challenge her to do better. Because she's very, very competitive. And so, like, when they're working out, they're climbing the stairs, they're always going at each other because they're the two most competitive people in the world. I love them together. I want them to get married. I'm like, show me another wedding for J-Lo.
What do you think they talk about? Moisturizers?
Money,
hair care,
not
money,
aging, secret unicorn blood. No, I think here's the thing. To be honest, here's what I really think about it. I think Jennifer Lopez is one of the most powerful women in the world.
Sure.
I think she's such a self-starter. She's so determined. She's so A-type. And she's kind of dated guys in the past that maybe were a B-type, you know? And I love Alex Rodriguez being with her because he's the same as her. He's going for it. He's, you know, he's just like a man with his own life. And I just think she's dating an equal, and I love that for her. You can tell, like, she's proud to be with him. She's not bossing him around like maybe Casper Smart in the past.
I'm glad she got rid of that Casper.
Yeah.
He's like, come on.
I mean, Casper seemed nice, but it just was like, is he on your level? I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe he was a nice guy.
I think it was out of convenience because he was always around being a dancer.
Because he was a dancer. Yeah, and he's like 20 years younger, wasn't he? Yeah.
Right. I mean, dancers are hot, and you know the rumors about dancers.
He wasn't
anyway,
even handsome.
Too early in the morning to talk about that. But I will say is that I interviewed J-Lo like just a couple weeks ago, and I asked her, you know, how are you making it work and stuff? And she said, you know, this is a thing. It is a lot of work because Alex and I both have careers, and we're both really busy. You know, Alex is still a big sports announcer, and he's traveling around to games. So she said, you know, I'll show up to his thing and on my only day off and be like, you better be excited right now that I'm here because this is my only day off, and I'm giving it up for you. And he's the same way, which is cool, and there's sacrifice. You know, of course, they're flying to each other on private jets. So is it really that much of a sacrifice? They're not in coach on, you know, Alaska Airlines, but whatever.
Yeah, they're not waiting in line to see what number is going to get called and when they're going to be able to get on and see if there's room for their bags.
Morning group 7, yes. Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, exactly. Great talking to you. Hey, and we're following you on Instagram, and we want you to, get a full recovery from this hideous car accident you were in. But I think it's cool that you're public about it because you're probably inspiring other people.
Yeah, no, it was a horrible accident, a big head-on collision, and I was in the hospital for a week, but I have a new bionic arm, and it's made of titanium, and lots of bolts and screws holding me together, but it's been great, and just thank everyone for all their support, especially when they're watching ET, and I've been wearing a sling for the last little while, so I'm just excited that no one's really taken me out on Twitter for my bedazzled slings at this point.
I'm telling you right now, it's the best-looking arm in show business.
It is. Kelty's big on fashion, you know, she does some discount shopping that she likes to go with us.
Feature.
And she's done a good job coordinating slings with the outfits.
So. I was in
thank
a band
you,
called Coordinating Slings. Kelty, thank you. That's Kelty Knight from Entertainment Tonight.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Ethan Hawke's going to be at LitFest. He'll be in studio with us in about a half an hour. And Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos. He's written a book that, you got to know about it. And Michael Imperioli will be with us after 9 as well in the CLTV hour. Texters continue to chime in, Dave. These are rules that grown-ups ought to follow, but they don't.
Okay.
912, get off the phone in your car. I still do see that occasionally where people are literally talking on the handset on their car while they drive.
I see worse than that. I see people, you know, if someone's going 50 miles an hour on the expressway and you pull up alongside them, that they're looking down and texting.
Yep.
How about driving through work zones?
Oh, yeah.
We should be, you know, going slower, like the signs
say. Super slow.
And, you know, I talk to some adults who say, I'm just going the speed limit like everybody else. And I was like, hello.
And those fines are serious, kids.
Yeah, they are. $250, some of them.
912 as well. When there's emergency vehicles on the side of the road, get as far away from them as possible. And 815, use your turn signal before you move into the turn lane, not after. Once you're in the turn lane, I know you're turning. Let me know ahead of time. 847, use your damn turn signal. Don't sigh and roll your eyes at the little old lady writing a check at the grocery store. Just leave her alone and help her get her stuff to her car. 815, don't lie. That seems like a pretty good one.
It would seem to be.
269, lane closures. Hello, merge before the lane ends.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
I don't know about that one. What, why do you need to merge before the lane ends?
Well, flow of traffic.
Okay, wait your turn, Joe. I mean, everybody else is waiting.
Well, that's true, but what I'm saying is, like, if it's a zipper, weren't we talking about the zipper earlier with merging?
Yeah.
You should go all the way to the end. That'll make things go quicker. If you merge early, then you got people merging. You don't know when people are merging. It slows everything down if you merge early.
You're in the room with Sandberg. Blink if you're a hostage and you need to be rescued. Because that was her idea. The zipper idea. 630, here's a rule you ought to follow. 15 items or less in the express lane means, hello, 15 items or less? Mm-hmm. Tell the guy that's got just a couple over 15 and it's 30.
But if you buy a bag of six apples, that doesn't count as six items.
That's one item. It's one item. Whatever has to be scanned.
Right.
We're talking 15 beeps. 810, don't use your cell phone and drive. 773, put your damn headlights on in bad weather. And pull over and change lanes for emergency vehicles. Make room. 847, say thanks when somebody opens the door for you. Wave when they let you into traffic. And ask before you pet dogs that you don't know.
That's a good one.
Those are all good. Mm-hmm. Game coming. Rules that adults ought to follow and they don't. 312-981-7200. Headlines next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Under budget, ahead of schedule.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Where essentially I'm the president.
On Chicago's very own.
I love Chicago. I know Chicago.
720 WGN.
There's a chance, Dave. There's a chance we may hear from the president any minute now.
Wow. From Canada?
Is he in Canada?
Is he on his way?
He's going to go talk to Canada about the fact that Canada has plenty of free parking and a lot of moose.
Yes.
Oh, he's on the phone right now.
Wow.
That was fast. I just don't want to interrupt or waste his time. Mr. President, good morning.
Good morning, Cochran. Great to be with me this morning. You know, I don't know if you know this, but Kim Kardashian asked me to pardon you, too. And frankly, you need it bigly.
You know, that's nice of her. Hey, welcome back to the show. You've been on in a while. And how about those Philadelphia Eagles? You disinvite them to the White House. You disagree with the stance on kneeling. They disagree with you. Is that how it went down?
You know, just like my own all-pro defensive tackle, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, said at the press briefing, the Eagles are the ones to blame for this, not me. Not me. Oh. Frankly, I thought it was all the concussions they had that made them forget to come to the White House. My bad.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, they really missed out, because nobody lip-syncs God Bless America like I do. Nobody. Tremendous performance, believe me.
You looked a little distracted, but moving on, Mr. President, do you have any comment on what LeBron James said? He said nobody wants to be invited to the Trump White House.
Well, last time I checked, Cochran, you have to win in order to come to the White House. And after seeing the Cavs play last night, LeBron will never have to worry about being invited. That I can tell you.
You know, there's a point there. You recently tweeted you have the absolute right to pardon yourself. Although you said, why would I do that? Because I've done nothing wrong. You believe you've done nothing wrong.
Beg your pardon? Oh, see what I did there. Look, this is totally ridiculous. Every time I bump into one of my Secret Service agents, I say, pardon me, pardon me. It happens yes. more than a few times on sure. a daily basis, sure. believe me. I love pardoning. You know, I might even pardon my golf clubs. They don't always do what I want them to, but I can't quit them. I can't quit them.
That's something you and I can agree on. Now, House Speaker Paul Ryan finally spoke up. He said, obviously, Trump shouldn't pardon himself. He said, no one's above the law. Any comment on that?
Paul Ryan, didn't he retire like 3 months ago? You know what? Somebody must have slipped Paul Ryan an Ambien, because frankly, he's talking nonsense again. I think Paul Ryan should pardon himself whenever there's a microphone in the room.
So let me talk about your lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, for a second. This guy. He said Mueller's trying to frame you.
You know, that may be true. I think it is. Rudy's a brilliant attorney, and from time to time, I'm not exactly sure if he remembers whether he's defending or prosecuting, but I will tell you this. Whichever side of me he's on, he's doing a fantastic job. Believe me.
Oh, listen, sir, people have been concerned about the First Lady's whereabouts. Yesterday, Melania makes an appearance, first time in almost a month. Why aren't we seeing her more?
Everybody's so worried. Where's Melania been? First of all, it's none of your damn business. You know, has she been locked in the basement of the White House making pickled sauerkraut with her feet and the rest of her Slovenian family that we keep down there all summer? Maybe. But again, it's none of your business.
The North Korea summit's back on and scheduled for next week. Is that correct?
You know, I was never worried for a minute, Cochran. I knew that Lil' Kim wanted to get together with me so bad. But I couldn't make it easy. I had to play hard to get. So I blew off his text messages. I blocked him on Twitter. And before I knew it, he sent me that giant apology letter. Such a kiss-up. He really is.
Well, you wanted to also get your take on the Miss America pageant. The Miss America pageant, I don't know if you know this, Dave, doing away with the swimsuit competition.
Yeah.
Any comment, Mr. President?
Wow. They're not wearing swimsuits anymore. Ooh, that's sexy. I love it. Now that's progress.
I don't think you completely understand. They're not nude. Look, last question. Bill Clinton says he wouldn't change anything about how he handled the Lewinsky affair. If it happened in the Me Too era, he still would do it the same way.
Right.
And then he walked his comments back after getting criticized. Thoughts on that?
Look, you know what? I've known Bill for a long time. Long time. And sometimes he says whatever he has to keep Hillary, who he's supposedly married to, from nagging him to death. We're still friends, okay? Matter of fact, I just saw him out in the hallway looking for interns.
Really?
Hey, Bill, come here. We're on the radio. Tell him how close we are.
I absolutely love this guy, Steve. I really do.
And I love you, too. You know what? We have so much in common.
Lots in common.
So much. We were both presidents.
Yeah.
We both love to eat fast food. And we both really want to see your wife go to jail.
Wait a minute. That is not true. I used to love to eat fast food, but I'm vegan now.
Oh, right. Forgot about that.
Be sure to get my new book, Steve.
Yeah, yes,
hey,
sir.
Catherine,
yes,
real quick before
yes.
I let you go.
Yes.
I'm helping Barron study for this history test. Did Canada ever apologize for burning down the White House during the War of 1812?
Can't help you with that, sir, but I appreciate you calling.
Later, loser.
It's President Trump and President Clinton. How about that?
I mean, what other radio show?
No show's getting that.
Nobody gets two
presidents. Nobody's getting that.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You gotta go and get angry at all of my honesty.
Texts continue to come in, Dave. Rules grown-ups ought to follow. This came up earlier in the show based on the fact that, adults at the graduation say don't applaud till all the kids are recognized. And then the adults, they go nuts anyway.
Right.
And I got one listener who said, look, a lot of money. 5.5 years later, we're whooping it up.
I get that.
I do have mixed emotions about it because I get it as well. 630, please leave the public bathroom a bit cleaner than you found it. You know, can I add one? This is like my least favorite thing to talk about, but let me add one here.
Okay.
Don't assume it's an automatic flusher.
Oh, that's a good point.
Don't assume. Make sure things are taken care of before you leave the room.
Also, like we work in an old building here.
Getting sometimes, older by the minute.
Sometimes you have to hold the handle a few more seconds to get it to
make
fully
sure
flush.
It's done.
You've got that 3 seconds. You're not in that much of a hurry that you can't wait to see if that toilet flushes.
And I don't care how big a hurry you are in, when you're washing your hands, you're doing whatever you're doing, don't leave the place a mess. It's a public, P-U-B-L-I-C bathroom.
I have a struggle because I can't stand seeing, we have those really thin paper towels that tear easily. Mm-hmm. And so when people try to pull them out of the paper towel dispenser, little corners get ripped off and then they're on the floor. I hate seeing
somebody's got to pick them up.
Right. And it drives me crazy. So I want to pick them up. But then I'm like, I'm not other people's mother. I shouldn't have to pick these up. But then it drives me crazy. So I end up picking them up, even though I'm mad at myself. And
I would say the reason you should pick them up is to do the right thing. Not you.
Mm-hmm.
The people that leave them. The other reason you should do the right thing is you're making Sandberg have a headache.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that kills me, too, is when I go into the men's room and there are newspapers spread out everywhere.
Yeah. Who said leave the newspaper?
I mean,
really? Throw it out.
Do that at home.
Well, if you do it at home, fine, it's your house. 773, say kind things to people. Everyone here is you leading by example. That's a good rule to follow.
That's kind of like Owen yesterday.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that kid. Last night. Man, do we have nothing to bitch about. Yep. Nothing at all. 708, treat others the way you want to be treated. Also very good. Mm-hmm. 630, don't park on striped areas of disabled parking spots.
That's right.
That's as bad as parking in the spot.
Correct.
The disabled vehicles require additional room for access to either side of the car, and you don't know what side of the car that access is on. 727, washing your hands after using the bathroom and holding the door so when you leave, you get a wet door handle.
Okay, but I'd rather they wash their hands and then hold the
door
handle.
But you don't know why the door handle's wet.
That's true.
I kind of did that at the new bathroom over here because there was no soap in it or paper or towels.
That's what your pants are for.
So
what we were doing, wiping our hands on our pants yesterday.
But I have like pink pants on. It's not good. Mm.
There's someone on the show regularly who this is a pet peeve with, and it's not me, but they make a point at their place of business to have waste baskets and the paper towel dispenser next to the door.
Right. A lot of restaurants do that now.
So you can take the paper towel and open the door, and before the door closes, toss the paper towel into the waste basket. Eventually, we're just going to be covered in bubble wrap, and we're just going to bounce from place to place. 630, pay attention in the crosswalk. Not all crosswalks have lights telling you to stop. This is from someone who is, if not blind, visually impaired, who said he has a sense of people going around him, not waiting for him to cross, like screaming up and going around him. How scary would that be if you can't see? And there's a truck or a car or a bike or a motorcycle like whizzing by you because you're in a crosswalk. Really? Are you that busy? You can't let the blind guy cross the street? Unbelievable. Bernie's in Batavia. Good morning, Bernie.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. A real quick story, what you were talking about before, and it made me chuckle so bad I had to call my golf buddy back. I just dropped him off in Batavia, and I pulled out to a four-way stop sign, and I looked to my right, and there's a pickup truck, and the guy's hustling to get his seatbelt on, because right across from him is a cop. And then I look at the cop as I'm driving by. He's on the cell phone. So he didn't even know.
Well, you know what, Bernie?
He was in Mayberry.
Bernie, you bring up another point, though. Here's the other thing. If a cop is driving on the highway, he's not going to pull you over and take you to prison. So obey the speed limit.
Right.
Obey the speed limit, but don't slow down to 40.
Yeah, don't hit your brakes. They kind of they're onto that.
Right. Then you look like somebody who ought to be pulled over. So, all right, Bernie, thanks, man. Thank you, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much. News next, and also the 9 o'clock CLTV hour coming up, 720 WGN. Oh, by the way, Ethan Hawke in studio, and Michael Imperioli, who you know best from The Sopranos, coming in or on the phone as well on 720 WGN.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Country Roads on KYPC. Ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to have with us today Townes Van Zandt.
Thank you.
Oh, great to have you here. New record, No Deeper Blue.
That's right.
Terrific record. Love it.
Thank you.
Love the last song, Blaze's Blues.
Yeah.
I don't know. It says it's dedicated to Blaze Foley. I don't know who Blaze Foley is.
It's actually, it's Blaze Foley.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I'm going down to the Greyhound station. Gonna get a ticket to ride.
You think you know Outlaw Country? If you don't know Blaze Foley, you don't know Outlaw Country. Ethan Hawke is here. I want to talk about the movie, but first I want to say congratulations. Tonight, you may want to make a note of this, you're receiving the Renaissance Award at the Gene Siskel Film Center's annual gala. You got a suit or anything you want to wear?
I got a suit, man. Okay. I'm hooked up. Yeah, I'm ready.
And your pal Vincent D'Onofrio is going to be there?
Yeah, he is.
We do a Q&A, or what's that like?
I do not know how they talked him into coming here and doing that.
You guys go back forever, don't you?
A long time. You know, I'd say Full Metal Jacket came out, I don't know, a year or two before Dead Poets Society.
Yep.
So when I arrived in New York, we were both aspiring actors, as it were, running around, getting in trouble.
Sure.
And now, you know, we have grown kids. And I will say it's strange to have him giving me this prize, because if I had to say a human being that affected the way that I think about acting the most, it would be him.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, he's they always give Oscars and things to these really showy performances.
Or right.
You have to
right.
be in a fabulous movie to. A lot of things have to go right
sure.
for that kind of award to
sure.
happen. But a guy like Vincent D'Onofrio, I always think the Oscar should really go to not the person who's in the most glamorous movie, who did, you know, had the best writer and the best
sure.
prop person, but how do you be good on Law and Order for 8 years?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's
come
an
up with
accomplishment.
New ways, come up with new ways to do a cops and robbers show.
I know. He works yeah. so hard on that, and you see him in Men in Black or Full Metal Jacket.
He's great.
Every character great. He plays, he always comes up. I mean, I did the last thing I did with him was Magnificent Seven, the remake
right.
we did with Denzel and Chris Pratt. And Vincent steals the movie. He's got this little voice, and he comes. I mean, have you seen the movie?
The fact that he can pull off the voice is pretty hysterical.
Yeah, no,
I remember some tight underwear.
Yeah, he came. We were driving to set one day, the first day, and he said, you know, I had an idea about this character. And I was like, oh, no. and he said, you know how Mike Tyson was so tough but talked so high? I was mm-hmm. like, yeah. He's like, I'm going to do that.
Well, right, because Vincent's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy. So yeah. you hear a tiny voice is always fun.
Yeah.
All right, so Blaze Foley. Blaze is the movie. There's some names in this you're not going to recognize. Future stars, great actors, but Sam Rockwell's in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sam Rockwell can do anything he wants now, so it
yeah,
must be a good
he's a big-time Oscar winner now, isn't he?
Yeah, he must like the story.
You know, I met... He does like the story. Blaze Foley... It's funny that you say you don't know Outlaw Country if you don't know Blaze. I always call Blaze the Snuffleupagus of Outlaw Country. You know, everybody knows Willie and Merle. Or,
sure.
You know, and if you go down a level, you might know Towns Van Zandt, the secret yep. hero of it. But not many know Snuffleupagus himself, mm-hmm. the bearded wonder that is the duct tape messiah of Blaze Foley. But I fell in love with him and his music and his lover wife wrote a memoir called Living in the Woods in a Tree about their time together falling in love. And that's when I read that, I realized, oh, you know what? You could make an amazing movie out of this. And the star of the movie, the guy, he just won Best Actor at Sundance.
Yeah.
And he's never acted in anything.
Yeah, Sundance loves this movie.
Well, he's a musician, and I'm sure you have people like this here in Chicago who is
right.
killing it in Philly,
right.
but struggling it. And the music business is just so hard right now.
It's impossible. It's a needle in a haystack.
It's a brutal business. And I fell in love with Ben's music. And then he started to remind me of Blaze Foley, because Ben is from Arkansas and he's a mm-hmm. big boy, and Blaze is a big boy. And
sure.
they both took their licks. And I went to Ben and said, hey, how'd you like to act in a movie? And believe it or not, when he said yes, he had no idea what he was getting himself into. I made him take acting lessons from Vincent D'Onofrio.
Well, there you go.
And Vincent...
That's
they
legit.
They did their first lesson, and Vincent called me up, and he's like, you... I'm like, what? Because... He's like, this guy is magic. And he's like,
no kidding.
Yeah, he said, you are so lucky. And I'm like, I know. He's like, I feel like I just gave Jack Nicholson his first acting lesson.
How
I was like,
that?
I know, right?
How about that?
And so then we went and made the movie and had this incredible time. Guys like Sam Rockwell were helping him out.
Well, and how about Kris Kristofferson?
I know.
Kris Kristofferson, Outlaw Country, hello.
Yeah, well, I figured in the movie, Blaze goes to visit his father. And I thought, well, who could... It's a kind of iconic figure to play the father of an outlaw country hero.
And you got
to
know a little dysfunction.
Yeah,
you got to know what
yeah.
the bad road, the rough road's like. Well, yeah. that's Chris.
That's Chris. And there's, it was so, it felt like the strangest, you know, Chris is like a little bit like a North Star for me, you know, a person who has lived his life so ethically, his heart is in such a beautiful place through his writing, and I think I like him as a personal champion because he did whatever he wanted to do. You know, if he wanted to act in a movie, he acted in a movie. If he wanted to fly a helicopter, he flew a helicopter. I mean, he was a true...
He's the kind of
jack
guy
of
when
all
he,
traits,
you know, it's funny you say that because he's the kind of guy that, and I totally agree with you, and I don't know him well, but when he dies, he's never going to have to look back and go, I wish I did this or wish I did that. That's a guy that's lived a life.
That's an amazing thing to be able to say.
People love your movie, Blaze. Inside Llewellyn Davis, I keep hearing that as a comparison. That's yeah. pretty good company.
Well, I take it as company because I love that movie so much, and it's hard to make a good movie about music. And part of my idea, you know, I'd done a movie about Chet Baker
mm-hmm.
that I really enjoyed working on, but a lot of, as I got to did the research on Chet, you really realize that his best self was through his music,
mm-hmm.
And that's where I thought, well, why don't I get real musicians and I'll run a little acting class and I'll have the, at least the music will be authentic. So who do you get to play Townes Van Zandt? Well, I got Charlie Sexton, who's been one of his generation's great guitarists.
Right.
He's played with Dylan, he's played with Bowie, he's played, and he knows about music. So when he talks to you about music or pours himself into this performance, he's got something to say to you.
Well, explain it to me, because I agree with the take on it, but you know, Dave Ennett, sports genius from Chicago here, the legend of Chicago sports. I'm a sports guy. We've talked about this before. I love Kevin Costner. He's a good dude. And you go see Tin Cup and you go, well, he hasn't played a lot of golf. You see guys who play, you know, baseball movies. They've never swung a bat. Your take on this makes sense. Let me get somebody who looks like he knows how to play a guitar and can play a guitar and teach them how to be a serviceable actor, right?
Well, and one of the things is that people, I've been saying this, you know, when I was younger, I started writing. I wrote a book and I started doing different things. And you can catch a lot of hell for that as if you're not staying in your lane.
Sure.
But one of the things that I find really beautiful about life is that none of us is one thing, especially in the arts. The idea that Ben Dickey or Charlie Sexton can communicate and make you laugh as a musician. Sure. They can tell you a story as a musician. I'd go to a gig in Philly, right? There'd be a couple hundred people there, and he'd play on stage for 4 hours. People laughing, and he'd tell stories, and through his music, he would communicate. Well, acting is the same thing. It's sharing some kind of inner music, right? And so I just had to talk to Ben about that, about don't change it, just keep playing.
Is that your approach as a director, is just find a core of somebody and let them roll?
If you can, it's a little bit of a methodology that came out of working with Richard Linklater.
Mm-hmm.
When I did those
movies, he's okay.
Yeah,
Boyhood, he's done all right. By the way, he's in a movie, right?
He's in Blaze, too.
Yeah.
I had him. But when we worked with Ellery Coltrane on Boyhood, for example, you have to do two things. You have to teach a young person to act, but you also have to let them harness their own self, their best self, their inner character, as it were. You know,
that's how it looks real.
And if you can let that shine and let them contribute, part of the trick is really inviting them in to be a collaborator. And so Ben helped me make this movie. He went and sat and learned every Blaze, not the songs in the movie, every Blaze Foley song exactly the way Blaze played them.
How about that?
You know, and it was amazing to be able to do that because I could steal these. I'd get shots of Ben hitchhiking and we'd hop in this truck in Louisiana and just have Ben play some Blaze Foley songs.
You know, this is not spoiler alert stuff because this is a biography of a real dude. But I don't want to give away a lot of it because people that don't know the story, I want them to go on the ride in the movie, right?
Right.
But Blaze Foley got killed at 39 years old.
Yeah.
Even the trial afterwards, figuring out what happened and why it happened and whether or not somebody ought to go to jail, that seemed to me like a so representative of his life because it was just a hot mess.
You know, here's the, when you're dealing with addiction, really bad addiction. People, you know, this is, it takes two bad drivers to have an accident. The guy who killed Blaze was an addict. Blaze was an addict. They were struggling as people.
Sure.
And it was a bad scene.
Sure.
And Blaze was trying to defend a friend. And, you know, that's
what was it, 39, right?
He was 39, yeah.
39. That's half a life.
It's half a life. And you know what's strange now? When I was younger, you know, I talked to a lot of people who were Blaze's friends, and they said the same thing. That when you're young, you have this thing where you think dying is kind of interesting and cool.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when River Phoenix died, how sad I was. But as I get older, I get even sadder.
Sure. You start to realize the value of life, how short it is, and you look at your kids.
And I start to see what he missed. That's not cool.
That's not cool.
There's an amazing essay by Martin Landau. He was at a film festival somewhere in Europe or something.
Okay.
He was walking around late at night, and in a storefront window, they had a, you know how they sometimes have a cardboard cutout of James Dean?
Yeah, sure.
And it was human, you know, so he's staring at a cutout of his friend, the guy was his roommate when he first was at Actor's Studio in New York, and he writes about it very beautifully of just talking to this cardboard cutout of this, because
Landau's an old man at that point.
Yeah,
he's going, this is what you missed.
Dean never had to get old.
Yeah.
And Landau was like saying, you don't know how wonderful it's been getting old.
Right.
It has its hardships.
True.
But you didn't even live. And that's how I feel about when I read that essay.
It's a great message for your kids, for our kids.
Yeah, my oldest kid is 19 now. You know, she's almost as old as River was.
How about that? Mm-hmm. You know? By the way, I want to talk about your last 30 for a few minutes before we run out of time. We'll take a break and do that. But just for a second, talk about what your daughter Maya's doing.
Well, my daughter is, she just, PBS just released BBC's remake of Little Women, mm-hmm. which... She plays Jo March, which is, you know, if you're a dad of three girls, which I am, you get to know the book Little Women well. And the idea...
And you never get to use the bathroom. Those are the two things that are true.
The idea that she gets to play this part and that she does it so well. It's a great production, too. I really enjoyed it. And now she's on Stranger Things.
It's the hottest show on HBO. It's the hottest show on TV.
I know. Can you believe it? It was strange to visit her because, of course, she's the...
I said HBO, Netflix I'm talking about.
It was... Look, it shows what I know. I didn't even... Exactly. I got to get hipper. But she's the same age I was when I was shooting Dead Poets Society. So I got to, it was some mirror reflection going to the set of Little Women and seeing all these women run around and making a movie together. It reminded me so much of all these young men that I was around on Dead Poets Society.
Sure. You know? Sure. You think about that cast. Good Lord. Stick around. More with Ethan Hawke in a second. How do we see Blaze? What's the best way to do it?
Well, Blaze is coming out in the late August, early September.
Right.
And we're going to release it slowly over the whole country. And
you're going to do an on-demand thing right away as well?
I don't think so. Not right away. Okay. Eventually. Okay. Go see it in the theaters first, because you know what? We worked hard on the music of the movie. It has... That's one aspect I know we got right,
right.
Because I wasn't in charge of it.
It sound good through the big speakers.
It sounds so beautiful. It's the way to see it.
More with Ethan Hawke in a second. Ethan Hawke is here. Blaze will open in theaters on September 7th. And I'm really looking forward to it. You know, it seems like the absolute right time to do a great movie about great music and the people that make it, because they're all a little twisted.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care who you are. Ethan, I want to talk about you for a second, because we've talked about everybody but you. What's the status of you in acting? Because you've turned out to be such a good director. Are you getting back at it, or you never close your door on it, do you?
No, you know, I always do. My whole life I've tried to make myself do other things, and it keeps my love of acting alive. You know, I've done the same job for 30 years. You know,
right.
So I started when I was 13. I mean, it's kind of like if you still did your paper route. You know, I mean, I have to make it exciting for myself in different ways and
keep challenging yourself.
Yeah, and learning about it from a different angle, like this movie that's out right now called First Reformed.
Mm-hmm.
It's written and directed by Paul Schrader, and he wrote Taxi Driver.
He was just in here a week ago talking about it.
Was he?
Yeah.
So I mean, he comes at the making movies from a whole different angle than I've experienced before. He wrote this book in the 70s, Transcendental Style and Film. I mean, this is a guy who's been studying and living and breathing movies for 50 years.
Sure.
So to be on set with him, he took my acting to a new place.
Let me just throw a couple titles at you and just give me your first All response. Right. We'll play Rorschach Test.
Okay.
Training Day.
Well, Training Day was... you know, my single greatest experience making a Hollywood movie. Denzel is not only one of the greatest actors of all time, he's also one of the greatest movie stars of all time, and that's a rare intersection. There's a lot of wonderful movie stars.
Well, but explain that, because those are two different things.
They are. It's... I can begin to speak. Most people don't know how hard it is to operate at the level that Denzel has right. operated for 30 years. Just making hit movies.
Right.
It is very hard to be such a good storyteller
right.
that every time you start spinning a yarn, it works. And he works inside every genre. Now throw at him, like, okay, well, there are guys, you know, Costner's a great storyteller, you know, Bruce Willis is a great storyteller, Tom right. Cruise is a great storyteller, right? But they don't make their names on the list of the greatest actors of all
they're
time.
They're great movie stars.
They're great, first ballot Hall of Fame, card-carrying movie stars.
Yep.
Denzel is both. You could put him next to Laurence Olivier, right, as far as... what his technique
is. Does he have a method? He's not method, right? He comes in and he does it. Because Training Day, he is such a badass. Did you have to leave him alone so he can get in that headspace?
I would... he does not need any help.
What he needs
is for you not to drop the ball. I had a very clear sense in the first couple days of rehearsal that if I could just do my job and play this character, this guy is going to make an incredible movie. And if I drop the ball, then the whole thing gets screwed up and it'll be, you know, there's a certain pressure that you can feel when you're working with somebody who's great at what they do.
So he give you notes when you're working?
He does whatever he wants. Right. If he wanted to give me notes, I don't know.
I'm thinking as a young actor where you're going, please give me something.
No, you don't help anybody. If you start trying to make everybody around your workplace happy all the time.
Yeah.
Especially
on a movie like that.
The only really way for me to like make Denzel happy is to play my part right.
Do it right.
And if I worry too much about being his friend or doing what he wants me to do, I'm actually not helping him. And I think that's one of the problems that you see when somebody gets really successful is everybody around them just tries to make them happy.
Sure.
Right? And that's actually not how you make someone happy, right? You make someone happy by doing a good job and being yourself.
Yeah, you actually make the whole thing worse if you try it the first way. Totally different genre, and Sandberg brought it up a few minutes ago. Reality Bites.
Reality Bites, you know, that's Gen X. That was my welcome to the zeitgeist. You know, I'd done Dead Poets Society, but I hadn't been an actor where anybody would know my name. Mm-hmm. And so Reality Bites, it was a certain strange moment. Nirvana was on the radio.
Mm-hmm. That whole early 90s chunk.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know that it was a hard character to shake for about a decade. You know, people just kind of saw me as Troy.
Well, it's hard to be, too, when you're the most memorable in a whole sea of memorable people in that movie. But I thought that your character pops.
And Ben Stiller was finding his voice. That was the first movie he directed. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he was going to be somebody. His work ethic and his passion.
How'd that work out for him? Did he ever make anything of himself, Ben Stiller?
He did okay. He's doing all right. Yeah.
Listen, man, it's a pleasure to see you. It's been a long time. You and I have only bumped into each other a couple times. You've always been nice enough to jump on the phone. But it's great to see you. And you sound like you're in a wonderful place in life.
You know, thanks for saying that. It feels that way to me, too.
Man, I'm really looking forward to the movie.
That because you've been in some bad places.
Well, listen, we all know.
Yeah.
But really looking forward to Blaze opening September 7th and, you know, out on demand. But as you talked about earlier, the music's too great not to see it in the big room.
Yeah.
So well, all the best.
Thanks for having me.
And don't forget, tonight, I hope you're lucky enough to be there at the Siskel Center when your pal Vincent D'Onofrio gives you this wonderful Renaissance Award.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you should show up. That's kind of important. Back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
I could watch her walk away all night.
Good, because like most girls with you, that's what she's going
to
do.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The book is called The Perfume Burned His Eyes. Father of teenage boys knows a little bit something about writing a book about teenage boys. And let's roll in Lou Reed, too. Michael Imperioli joins us, and that's his book, his first book. And you already have a hit on your hands. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Nice to have you on. I appreciate it. And congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much. It's been very exciting, actually.
You know, I'm not through it yet, but when you got Joyce Carol Oates on the cover, that's not so bad.
No, that does give it a little bit of juice, I would say. Yes, you're right.
So you're raising teenage boys. The book, and again, you got to get into the rhythm of the book to get the book, and I suggest you get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose the first one. The Perfume Burned His Eyes. You were a teenage boy. I was a teenage boy. This feels more like a little bit of Christopher and a little bit of you than your own sons.
I started writing just to relate to that frame of mind, because my son was 16 in 2013, and it's not about him. It's not really about me. None of those events are true, but like you said, we were that age, and looking back and remembering what it's like to be that age, still a kid, not yet a man, almost a man,
right?
And all of a sudden being thrust into a very new world, and especially in a big city like New York, because the kid, he goes from like a neighborhood in Queens to like Midtown Manhattan, and even though it's only like 2 or 3 miles apart, it's a world of difference.
Tell everybody how Lou Reed gets involved here.
the kid, you know, the kid grows up in a blue collar neighborhood, and in his 16th year, he loses his father and grandfather. They both pass away. His two main male role models,
mm-hmm.
and his mom inherits a little money from the grandfather, and they move from Queens into kind of a posh neighborhood on the east side of Manhattan. And living upstairs in this building is the musician Lou Reed, who in 1976, when this story is set, is in the middle of a particularly crazy, you know, period of his life due to, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll and what have you, but a very creative and productive period at the same time. And the kid winds up being kind of a gopher for Lou. He doesn't even know who Lou really is. And Lou, by default, becomes this unorthodox father figure to the kid.
It's a cool hit, a hitch and a cool angle and a cool part of the book. Did you meet Lou Reed? Did you know him?
I got to know him around 2000 after The Sopranos came out. And mm-hmm. I was always a big fan, and he was a big hero of mine. And when he was playing a concert, I wound up getting tickets and through his publicist. And then his publicist after the show said, Lou wants to meet you. And I didn't know Lou knew who I was or knew I was there. And we were backstage, and he was wonderful. And we stayed friends till he died in 2013. But I used to see him, like, wandering around Greenwich Village in the 80s and early 90s when I was living there, you know, in my 20s. And, you know, he was kind of a fixture in New York. So
I always thought Wandering Around would be a good title for an album for him because, you know, he's one of these people you'd watch wander around. He'd make that interesting.
He would. He did.
The book, again, is The Perfume Burned His Eyes. It's Michael Imperioli. All right. I know you just had a sitcom that didn't get picked up. It wasn't yours, but you were great in it. What are you doing next?
Well, I have a movie that just premiered in Portugal, actually, which is it's kind of a strange...
Yeah, the traditional Portugal route?
Well, as a filmmaker friend of mine who's from Portugal but lived in New York, and this is the third movie we've done together, and it premiered there. And it's kind of a Portuguese movie with an American New York cast.
Okay.
And it's just opened there, and it's become kind of a thing there. It's doing really well. So next stop is to bring it to the United States and the rest of the world. I'm also kind of doing a bunch of book stuff right now, book tours.
Well, sure.
I'm coming to your neck of the woods this weekend, which is very exciting.
Oh, part of Lit Fest?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there Saturday afternoon. I have two other movies coming out. One where I play Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York in a movie called Escape at Dannemora.
How about that?
Which was really fun, actually.
Yeah, well, and kind of it's...
Sit down with him and get to know how he approaches his job, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, with politics being the new sports, everybody wants to talk politics. There's no shortage of material there.
No shortage of material. That's putting it lightly, I'd say, yes.
What's harder, writing this book or everything else you've done?
Writing is hard. I mean, I have I've had a parallel career as a writer for the last 20-something years. I wrote several of the Soprano episodes,
right,
and two screenplays, one that Spike Lee made called Summer of Sam, and another mm-hmm. one that I made called Hungry Ghosts, and a bunch of stuff that never got made or saw the light of day. And writing is hard because, you know, it's just you and that blank page, you know what I mean? When you're an actor, you get mm-hmm. the script and you know what you're going to do, or you figure out what you're going to do, but writing, it's all got to come from the imagination, so writing is definitely a challenge, I mean, but something that I've come to enjoy.
You got a bunch of stories bouncing around in your head all the time because it's what you do. Are you going to write another book, or...
I think so.
You are? Okay, good.
Yeah, I might turn this into a movie, though.
It feels like a movie.
Yeah, you know, that's what a lot of the feedback has been. I didn't write it with that intention. I really wrote it just as a book. I didn't even think about turning it into anything till very recently through a lot of the feedback I've been getting, but maybe that's going to happen. We'll see.
And as a dude, early in the book, you talk about a character named Willie, and take this as the compliment that it's meant to be. Just reading about Willie, I wanted to punch him in the face.
Yet the kid, you know, it's his best friend, and he kind of misses him when he leaves.
Sure.
That's how it is growing up, isn't it?
I totally get it. All right, so you're not here, so I'm going to sign this book for you. What do you want to say about our conversation?
I want to say I'm very grateful to be on the air with you.
Signed, Michael. I didn't even put your good friend because we haven't seen each other in a while. Hey, dude, I've always been a fan. Nice to talk to you again, and congrats on the book.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon. Michael Imperioli. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I've got some more texts to get to. Rules for grownups that we aren't following, and we should. And then Bill and Wendy will be on.
No more Know Your Monkeys?
No. We're out of...
Come on.
We'll bring it back tomorrow, though. Oh, what's good. Coming up at 10?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. I
got a new girl. A lot of Ethan Hawke texts coming in. Thank you for that. 815, enjoyed hearing you talk to Ethan Hawke. And so it goes. And there's also somebody who worked with Ethan Hawke on a movie. And I can't find the text to bring it up on the air, but know that I told Ethan hi off the air for you. Oh, here we go. Mr. Hawke, hi from Heather Quick's parents. You're scripty and First Reformed. So there, message delivered. Bill F. and I are major movie stars, as you probably know. We'll yes. talk about that coming up.
We know what it's like. We know whatever he's going through, Ethan Hawke, you know what it's like. I know what it's like.
Yeah, it's not easy.
You can't walk across the street without somebody wanting to either take your picture or tickle you.
The weird part is how expensive it gets to hire paparazzi to follow me around.
That does start to add up after a while.
All right, look like you're trying to take my picture. We got a few more texts to get to, too, on rules grown-ups should follow, but they don't before we're done. And Bill and Wendy are next. Text question of the day. This came off something in Hi to Bill and Wendy that Sandberg saw where the grown-up said, don't applaud till all the kids graduate.
Sure.
And all the adults applauded as well and broke the rules. So what are the rules that adults should be following that they're not? 708, drive better than you did when you were a teenager.
Solid.
815, does it hurt to give a compliment rather than asking someone how much you paid for something? Just say, hey, that looks nice, as opposed to what
I have to ask how much it was. I'm sorry.
847, abandoned shopping carts in the handicap space.
Mm. Yeah.
Come on. 815, when family invites you for a party, at least respond. Do the RSVP. Mm-hmm.
You have to?
Yeah, it's family. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can say no, but say no.
Just respond.
847, the people with a handicap sticker that park in a handicap spot, look around, and then run to the door so no one sees that they're not actually handicapped. Yeah, it's my mom's car, but I was just taking it here.
You know, we missed one really obvious one.
What's that?
At youth sports, be a spectator. Don't yell at the coach. Don't yell at your kid.
And don't yell at the umpire.
Yeah, and the umpire.
Yeah, the kid right. umpire.
I'm out. No. I'm like Janice Soprano.
773, wear clean underpants. 815, Steve, push the shopping carts all the way in.
Yeah.
As opposed to just throwing them in the cart corral.
Right.
847, say please and thank you. 815, you're your kid's parent, not their best friend. 847, keep your dog on a leash. 847, look both ways before you cross the street. 224, stop harassing any homeless people ever, ever, ever. Well, I would hope. Come on.
Right.
219, when my wife was pregnant, random people would touch her belly.
Oh.
Yeah, don't do that, people.
Did you have that happen?
And don't say baby bump. I hate that.
Well, at least ask first.
You really don't want strangers touching you, do you?
No.
No.
Not there.
Didn't bother me.
Really?
Well, if they asked, I mean, I didn't care.
Wendy has a map of her body with acceptable areas and unacceptable areas. She hands it out at random.
It's just your stomach. That's your stomach.
There's a baby in there.
Right. It's my rear end or something.
Oh.
So your stomach's okay, your fanny's not.
Yeah.
All right.
Got to draw the line.
217, don't push anyone under the train tracks if they kindly ask you not to pee in public.
That's as fresh as the day's headlines, Steve.
That seems strong.
That just happened.
630, you got a large stack of coupons? Don't go to the self-checkout lane.
708 Park Between the Lines.
Yes.
773 Don't make your purchases in the return line because you're too lazy to go to a regular cashier. 815 Say bye before you hang up the phone. You're not in a movie.
Ah.
810 You don't use a handicapped stall unless you are. 219 The response is thank you. It's not no problem. 815 Change the empty bottle of water in the break room. 773 Take the paper towel off the roll, put it in the crook of your arm before you wash your hands so you don't have the nasty handprint on the paper towel. And then 815 No headphones.
What did Mary Sandberg?
Yeah, she wrote most of
all of these. Every one of these.
815 No headphones while driving. Also, don't text. Oh, never mind.
Good.
And then 773 Stop looking at my wife. That's the last one. Anyway, great stuff, you guys. Thank you. What are you doing today?
We have a short show.
Yeah,
just action a short packed, show. But short, because White Sox baseball happening.
You're out at 10:05?
Yep, 10:05.
Why? I felt terrible about taking the first
No, you're fine.
See you tomorrow.